So we've only got, like, this episode and one more episode before we wrap up for the year.
Have we really?
That's scary.
Really? Is it that close to the end of the year?
Yes!
Yeah, I wish someone Merry Christmas today. First time. This year, I mean.
Well, frankly, Christmas has been out since before Halloween, so I think you've showed a rather good...
I think it comes out just after my birthday. It's like, yeah, Susie's had her birthday. November 10, everyone. And then suddenly, whoosh, everywhere is streamers and sprinkles of glitter and yay, nothing wrong with glitter.
That's right.
Yes, but everywhere is Christmas carols and things. I mean, at my workplace, they've started putting things up around where I work, so it's great. It's interesting.
I'm not that jolly yet.
You wait for it. You've lost your belly.
I'll get there.
You can't be a jolly Santa now without your belly.
Oh, I can.
Sorry, everyone. Trev's lost, he's been doing really good stuff this year and lost a fair amount of weight, so yippee.
Okay, I've lost over 20 kilos since
yay! March.
Yeah, there we go. It's out there.
Now we're all healthier.
Yay! And we should probably get on with the podcast.
Yeah, this is weird banter.
It's not the weirdest.
You reckon? Is that a challenge?
If you think you've had weirder banter in previous episodes, let us know. There's no prize, just let us know.
Bragging rights.
What the?
Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history to make you say, what the history? I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Susie Holland.
And what gloriously bizarre history do you have for us this evening?
Oh, man, I've got a really weird one to go along with our not-so-weird banter.
We don't need to talk about the banter now.
Okay, we won't talk about the banter. That was all, that's like, 30 seconds ago.
That's history.
That is history. See? We're educational. Anyway, okay. I'm going to tell you all about a very strange story. And it goes a little something like this. Okay, sorry. Medical science has come a long way over the many years since the first person attempt to work out how our bodies tick, what happens under our skin, and how our bodies worked. How does blood move in our veins, and countless other questions that scholars have pondered over the years. The first person who thought the only way to answer what lies beneath our skin was to go under the skin was the Greek medical anatomist and practitioner Herophilus, who lived from 335 BC to 255 BC and was given bodies by the rulers of Alexandria of convicted criminals to further his research. Herophilus was accused of being a butcher, as reportedly the bodily dissections were carried out on bodies of those still alive. However, these complaints were made 250 years after his death, but the research that was done led to a better understanding of various bodily systems, such as the digestive, nervous, and cardiovascular systems. There was a taboo against dissection since the time of Plato, where it was believed that the soul remained in the body after death, and after Herophilus, dissections were banned for another 1800 years, though some sources state that in 1540 in England, the recently deceased bodies of four convicted criminals were approved to be dissected. Even at established universities such as Oxford, medical anatomy wasn't taught until 1624, and in 1636, an update to the statutes at universities stated that to be awarded a license to practice, a student needed to be able to successfully perform two anatomical dissections. Even after the update, a dissection was seen as a particularly nasty act, even when it was done in the name of medical science. The Murder Act of 1752, however, gave surgeons the bodies of hung criminals, rather than the bodies be on public display from the gibbets. So the surgeons were happy they got to study the human body further, with the foundation teachings, with a few cadavers, and the public and authorities were happy, apparently, so they didn't have to see or smell people hanging around, literally. However, the surgeons weren't happy for long, as the demand for fresh cadavers far outweighed supply in which to practice new techniques and research the human body further. So, what's the medical science fraternity to do? Well, all those people who have died from natural causes or from accidents who aren't criminals, and have been buried by their grieving families in the graveyards aren't doing too much. Time to go digging, boys. But not us. We don't want to get our hands too dirty. Let's get others to do it for us. Enter the Resurrection Men, gangs of men and women who, for a profit, would dig up fresh corpses of men, women, and children to deliver to the surgeons, and this is a practice that became very popular and lucrative in the 18th and 19th centuries, and not just in England. Other countries such as the USA and Ireland also had these practices. This in itself was not illegal, as the cadavers didn't belong to anyone, as they were dead, but the act of selling the body, dissection itself, and taking anything else apart from the body was. However, digging up bodies was seen as a moral and religious sin. The graves targeted were Britain's poor, and in the US, the graveyards of people of African-American descent. Because it was illegal, the Resurrection Men would dig up newly buried bodies under the moonlight, and the sooner the better before major decomposition and smell took place. After the body was dug up, the men needed to get away as soon as possible to deliver their cargo. Some gangs became rather inventive on how to do this. One story from Ireland, the gangs would infiltrate the mourning party, ply them with opium and whiskey to help them with their grief, and make off with the body, leaving the real mourners to bury a coffin filled with rocks. While they have dressed the body in clothes, put them in amongst the gang, and walk their drunk friend home while delivering the poor unfortunate to the surgeons ready for the date with a dissecting knife.
They literally weakened and burned his
foot. Oh, they did. Oh, wow. Dear. The families, meanwhile, cottoned on to this practice and came up with some inventive ways themselves to combat the Resurrection Men. Some families employed military guards or members of the family to guard the grave. Some even came up with a gun with a tripwire that would shoot anyone that came close to the grave. This is where women came into the Resurrection Gang sphere, when, portraying the grieving mother and or widow, she would kneel close enough to the grave, but far enough from the tripwire, and simply cut the wire, leaving the grave free for her gang to come along and take the contents to the surgeons. Again, under the guise of the grieving mother and or wife, a woman would present at a medical school howling that a member of her family had been stolen, retrieve the body only to have the body given to a member of the gang outside for it to be sold to another school. Talk about double dipping. Iron coffins and metal gates that fit over the graves, called mort safes, were also employed to deter the gangs, with the mort safe being rented by families as per need. Inevitably, there were near riots at public hangings, as in the case of Half Hangit Maggie from a couple of podcasts ago, where medical students would fight for the body of the deceased with the family, and of course came the fights between rival Resurrection Men gangs over bits of turf. Literally. There were fights between gangs and military guards employed to look after the body, such as a case in Ireland where a gang tried to dig up a prominent recently deceased member of society, saw that they were outnumbered, and came back a few days later to retrieve the body and got into a gunfight with the guards. Things took even a more grisly turn in 1828 in Edinburgh, where the public was shocked to discover that William Burke and William Hare, who weren't content to dig up a body, they went straight to the source and suffocated to death intoxicated, crippled, and old people. Burke was hung and Hare turned witness to save himself and went to prison. This led to a gang of Resurrection Men who, in 1831, called themselves the London Burkers after William Burke and carried on Burke's macabre work. One well-publicised story, and what got Resurrection Men John Bishop, Thomas Williams and James May hanging from the noose, was the murder of a 14-year-old boy for profit that they planned to sell to a medical school. The murderous trio came undone when it was discovered that the boy's body didn't show signs of being buried. The authorities were notified and the men imprisoned, being hung on the 5th of December 1831, 4 days after the very public trial at London's Old Bailey. This crime and crimes similar naturally caused a massive public outcry, and the Anatomy Act of 1832 was created. This new act saw the need for dissection to further medical science and allowed bodies of those who were poor and or ill and unclaimed to be used for dissection, and then expanded to include donations of bodies by the deceased family. Then advances in the art and science of embalming put a halt to the need for Resurrection Men, when the medical schools could keep corpses for longer. What the indeed.
I always find that story fascinating. Every time I hear about the Resurrection Men, it's just...
I know.
such an important part of medical history, but so grisly and macabre.
Exactly. And without Herophilus' teachings, we wouldn't know how blood ran through the veins, because he did some beautiful groundbreaking work on that. And that was way back, way in BC times. And yeah, the guy was a genius. And it just grew from there.
So important, yet so shocking.
Yes, very shocking.
So after that rather shocking segue, there is a saying that things always come in threes, be it good, bad, or just plain bizarre. This is a tale of a man whose life took this saying to the extreme, with a little extra thrown in for good measure. Let me introduce Walter Somerford. Along with many others of his generation, he set off to fight in World War I. Poor old Walter got the shock of his life as he was galloping on his horse across the fields of Belgium in 1918. You see, this is when poor Walter got struck by lightning and was thrown from his horse. He survived but was temporarily paralysed from the waist down. He mostly recovered, but this brought an abrupt end to his military career, and he went off to find a nice place to retire. He eventually landed in Vancouver, Canada, a lovely area to settle down in amongst the lush forests of the Great North. This is what Walter did, enjoying wandering the forests and resting beneath the trees while fishing in the local lakes and rivers. This idyllic lifestyle came to an abrupt and, well, shocking end. One day in 1924, while fishing in a local river, the tree he was sitting beneath was struck by lightning, electrocuting the man for the second time in his life. He was found beneath the still-burning tree, alive but paralysed down his right side.
This poor guy.
I know. But it took about 2 years, but he did regain the use of his legs and was able to get on with his life in Vancouver. I can't say for sure that he cut down on his fishing, but he certainly enjoyed going on a walk. So it was that in 1930, he was strolling through a local park when clouds began to gather and thunder began rumbling in the sky.
Uh-oh.
I can only imagine the feeling of, oh no, not again, that went through Walter's very being as, for the third time in his life, he was struck by lightning. This was the worst of the lot. While he survived this shocking assault, this final blast left him completely paralysed. He held on for another 2 years before finally passing in 1932. His family buried him in Vancouver's Mountain View Cemetery, where they believed he would finally be safe from the thundery menace of the sky. Mother Nature had one final bonus in store. In spring of 1936, 4 years after Walter passed, a storm built up and unleashed its fury. Visitors to Mountain View Cemetery in the aftermath made a very shocking discovery. Walter's gravestone had been split by a direct lightning strike during the storm.
Oh, dear.
So that's the story of Walter Somerford. Not only did he have the strange misfortune of being struck by lightning 3 times and surviving during his lifetime, he went for a posthumous round. It's safe to say this has to be one of the most shocking What the Histories I have come across so far.
Oh, that poor guy.
I know. I know that was a short one, but I thought that was certainly worth recounting.
Oh. We're happy little Vegemites as bright as bright can be.
Yes, I think our stories...
We all enjoy our Vegemite and What the History.
Actually,
Vegemite.
Not that great. definitely interesting. Like, both our stories had both...
Oh, God.
Entertaining and macabre elements, I guess, yes.
Yes, this is the entertaining but macabre episode.
Woo!
Yeah, and it's not even Halloween.
No, but
I
you should totally
keep it for Halloween.
You should totally check out a Halloween episode.
Yeah,
it's actually,
go for it.
It's actually less macabre this year than previous years.
Oh, no, was it less macabre than what we've just done?
Not, I don't know.
Leave you to decide.
Yes. But definitely check out what the Halloween number 3. And the earlier ones if you're game.
Oh, God.
Oh dear, and that is What the History. Now, if you enjoyed what we talked about and want to know more, we've got links to our references down in the description just down below this podcast. You can also head to our homepage at wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you can find the podcast pages and links for all the stories we have talked about so far in our 2 and a bit years of doing this.
Oh my goodness. And we've loved it.
Oh, so
bring it on. We can do this until the day we fall off this planet.
That list keeps on getting bigger of our topics. And if you have got any topics you think we might be interested in, please let us know. You can leave comments on that homepage. You can send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com. If you go to our brand new video site, Rufus Project TV, there is a story why we now have our own video site, no longer publishing to YouTube. You can ask me, send a message to me if you want to know. But the email for that one is tv@rufusproject.com.
You're doing so well here, Trev.
Yeah. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on your normal podcast. You can find us.
We're pretty much everywhere now.
Yeah. It's
just amazing.
I literally get exhausted trying to say all the places we are.
I don't know how you do it.
It's
like ingrained. It's burned into your brain.
It is. It is indeed. Now, speak of a thing being burned in my brain, because I watched the movie for it today. Next week, if you follow the Rufus Project podcast, the other podcast I do with my good friend Christian Fletcher, we're having the season finale on that one. I don't normally give that a plug, but that one's going to be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
By special request of actor, dancer, teacher, producer...
Awesome friend. Hi.
And I've forgotten the word. She also works hard to promote the Southeast Queensland film and television industry as well. She's an advocate, that's it.
An advocate.
She's definitely an advocate for that, along with her own awesome podcast On Set with Rachel Lee. Rachel Lee asked us to watch Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure. I won't say any more about that. We'll leave that for the podcast.
That's right.
But Rachel will be joining us for that finale. And in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be back with our own What the History finale for the year as well. So that's something to look forward to.
Yep.
I think you've done it. I've covered everything. So I think it's time to wrap things up. So we will be back in a couple of weeks' time.
For one last time this year.
Absolutely.
Apparently we have to go on holiday. I mean, not holiday, but apparently we have to have a little sabbatical from What the History.
Podcasts are allowed to have holidays too.
Are they?
Yes.
But I like doing this so much.
Well, so do I, but I'm doing other stuff over the break. I've got a few new projects that may be being launched over the break. So
that's right.
It'll actually give me some more time for that. And
good job, sir.
We will be back in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, yes.
Again. With 2 more bizarre bits of history to make you say, What the history?
Good night, everyone.
Farewell. You need to be the-